All right, I got to go to the bullpen. Very early. Like Charlie Montoyo in a, in an Anthony Kay start. That's not fair.
Don't be mean to Charlie.
That's not fair. But maybe we can call this the opener. Stephen Brunt joining me. Kevin Barker is at a last minute or a last hour situation drop in his lap. So I have gone to the bullpen.
Yes,
I'm relatively...
Big old boots to fill here. Big old boots.
Big old boots.
Don't let it beat you.
That's right. Let it beat you. He's still here in spirit. Barker will be back tomorrow.
Yes, he will.
The Blue Jays, 4-2 losers to the Boston Red Sox. Last night, it is walk-off Wednesday. That's a retake. Your calls, your texts will also be joined by Dave O'Brien, the voice of the Red Sox. The number is 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. 590-590 is the text line. Be nice and put your name and location on the text. I don't care what you say. I mean, quite frankly, if you're not nice, I won't read it on air. But at least have the decency to put your name and location. And it depends. I might read it on air, even if you're not nice. I mentioned 4-2 of the Boston Red Sox beating the Toronto Blue Jays last night. The Boston Red Sox continuing to run riot in the American League East. They are 12-6, as we all predicted, in first place. The Blue Jays are 7-10, and Stephen Brunt, with each passing day, the return of Teoscar Hernandez and George Springer becomes more and more important. If for nothing else, just to give this lineup a... Just to make this lineup whole again, because boy, oh boy, right now it's running on fumes. Pitching doesn't bother me, but the lineup,
Pitching's good. You know, like even last night, you know, Ryu made one mistake. He didn't have his best stuff, but he made a mistake. The guy hit it. Was good. You know, I think Ryu actually after the game kind of tipped his cap to the hitter. I think that's appropriate. You know, it wasn't a horrible mistake. But, you know, at a certain point in any baseball season, you got to win some 6-5 games, right?
Yep.
And they don't appear to be capable of doing that on the offensive side right now. There's just too many holes right now. And it's, again, I still think this, I believe what I believe going into the season, that this team will score runs, but we haven't seen the lineup intact. There's a lot of, you know, that excuse goes around baseball. There's a lot of injuries for sure. But you do have reinforcements coming by the weekend. And, you know, and then you're going to have to be a little bit patient because I don't, you know, George Springer might jump in there and look like himself, but I don't think Teoscar Hernandez is. I think that'd be a lot to ask considering, you know, the layoff and the inability to work out for part of that layoff because of COVID. But, you know, eventually I still think this team will score runs, and I think eventually we'll still have questions about the pitching. But, you know, right now it's the opposite. The pitching is, like, think about this, Jeff. In a game that was still there to be won last night, you know, if they'd hit at all, they got quality innings out of Joel Payamps, I'm not sure which. I'd say I've heard both, and Castro, the Detroit Tigers waiver claim. So, you know, like they've already had some kind of found gold here in terms of pitching. You know, I'm not betting on those guys being on the roster 3 months from now. But you could almost not ask more of what you've got out of the pitching staff. It's all right now. It's just all about the offense and defense. That is the third element of the game, which we usually get to third, but let's not overlook it.
No, the defense has not been good, and we've talked about the infield defense ad nauseum, and essentially a bunch of guys. I wouldn't say they're out of position, but a couple of them are out of position. A couple of them are learning new positions, and that's to be expected. The outfield defense. That really, I'm not saying that all those balls would have been caught, but that wasn't necessarily a rookie outfield out there. Those guys have played at Fenway Park before. Maybe, I don't know if Kevin Biggio has ever played right field before at Fenway Park. But,
they said he had last night on the broadcast, okay. Like 4 or 5 times, I think. So,
okay.
Like
so
not, yeah, more
at
than
Fenway?
You think. Yeah.
At Fenway. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. And that makes sense. But yeah, the defense is a concern. For me, the defense is probably more of a concern than the hitting, only because when George Springer is back and Teoscar Hernandez is back, I've got to think the lineup is going to be something more closer to Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, Hernandez, Gurriel, Grichuk, you know, and then maybe if you can have, you know, whoever's catching Marcus Semien and, whoever's at third base hitting down lower in the order. I think Barker's right. I think you put, at this point, with Kevin Biggio, who's hitting 156, at this point, I think you just say to Kevin Biggio, play good defense at third. Go down to the bottom of the order. Do what you were doing last year. Forget what you've been working on. But this lineup should be strong enough that if Kevin Biggio could do what he did last year, I'm talking about approach, I'm talking results, you would take that. If he can do that and play good defense at third base, that should be enough.
Yeah, ideally it's more of a premium offensive position than that. But with this lineup, you can spread it out a little bit in theory. I've got to say I'm concerned about him though, because it's not. Yeah, I'll take what he did over the entire 60 game season last year, but the end of that season stretches where, you know, and which seems to have continued into this year. The fact that he seems to have holes that are being exploited.
It's the same holes.
And I, you know, you worry when a guy hasn't found a way to adjust. And again, I know it's early on in career, early on in season, et cetera, but I there is a diversity of opinion about what Kevin Biggio is.
Well, I keep thinking, you know, and I was on Good Show today, and I think we need to look back at what was said of Kevin Biggio when he came up. Yeah. And that was, he was a bit of an overachiever.
Yes.
And a guy who was going to be, in most people's minds, a utility player. And that's not the same thing as a bench warmer. But that was the thinking with Kevin Biggio, a guy that could play multiple positions for you. And that utility was first and foremost his strength. Whatever you got offensively wasn't necessarily going to be gravy. You thought he could be a contributor, but you certainly weren't. I don't think anybody looked at Kevin Biggio and said, ultimately, that's a guy where we're going to say, boy, we need that bat in the lineup.
No.
And the problem, I think, that has happened, and this isn't entirely Kevin Biggio's doing, but he's been lumped in with Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yes.
The young guys, the core of the team, sons of former major leaguers, two of them Hall of Famers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And
he's not them.
He's not them.
No.
He's not them.
Which is fine. Like, you can still be a pretty good Major League Baseball player and not be them.
Lourdes Gurriel Jr. isn't them either, but he could still be fine.
Yeah, he's perplexing. You know, I think he needs...
Big swing, slow start. I'm buying in with Barker in this front. I'm not worried about Gurriel.
No, I'm not worried about him at the plate. I'm puzzled by how he plays defensively. You know, how he either seems to be in too shallow or too deep, you know, on everything. It's either he's... Yeah, I just wonder about him thinking the game
but his positioning,
coaching thing. I know it's on his little card on his wrist, right? In theory, I get it. I that's another thing that I puzzle over, but he's obviously, you know, like, how many times have you seen him running after a ball over his head or not getting to a ball in front of him? You know, I hope he figures it out, and I think he will. At the plate, I'm less worried. Absolutely. But I got to tell you,
the catching situation has got to be a huge concern. I'm sorry. And again, I understand you didn't expect the catchers to be main offensive contributors, but come on, Danny Jansen sitting .065.
He's not close, Jeff.
Like, he's not close
they're
at
not,
all.
They're not competitive at bats.
And Alejandro Kirk, limited sample size, but this is a guy whose offense has got him here.
Yeah, I still think that was the right call. You know, even if he doesn't survive there for this season, if he ends up getting sent down at some point, I think between him and, like, Reese McGuire wasn't going to hit anything for you anyway, right? So, and again, I think Reese McGuire might be a slightly better defensive catcher than Alejandro Kirk, but I think Kirk's okay.
Yeah.
And I'd rather have him there than Gary Sanchez defensively. You know, like, he's not a disaster defensively. No, defensively. Gary Sanchez all over the place behind the plate, I wouldn't, no.
Okay.
You know, that's, but...
One thing Gary Sanchez does have, he can throw people out, and I have seen absolutely no evidence that Alejandro Kirk is ever going to be able to throw.
Well, that's out. I go less on whether you're throwing base ball, because that's a two way street, right? There's two people involved in that process. There's a pitcher and a catcher, so I'm not sure how many guys he's had a chance to throw out of the people he's there. But I don't think they're that worried about. They're worried about his arm, and I think he catches okay. You know, the actual catching of the baseball and calling a game and blocking pitches, I think he's done pretty well. And I just don't think that the choice was between him and Reese McGuire. And Reese McGuire is not going to get you anywhere.
I mean, I'm beginning to think, and I'm certainly not in the certainly not the only one to think this. I know Buck Martinez has thought it as well. I really think they should have focused more on catching in the offseason. I understand it's a position of organizational strength, but clearly that organizational strength isn't here this year. And maybe this gets back to, you know, what this front office thinks of this team. Is it, again, is it closer to last year's 60, the team that made the playoffs in 60 games, or is it a little closer to the team the year before? And, you know, I don't expect them to come out and tell us that because I think it would be counterproductive, but part of me thinks that maybe that's one of the things that work here.
Well, I think it's exactly between the two, Jeff. Like last year...
I'll put it this way. Would you rather... This is horribly hindsight-ish. I get that. But would you rather the Jays have taken some of the money they spent on Marcus Semien, upgraded at catcher, and had Biggio at second base?
Well, the only upgrade was Real Muto, really, right?
James McCann's an upgrade over what?
But that's a lot more money than 1 year of. It's 1 year, Semien, right? So like those are not 1 year deals. So it's a completely different proposition. And I think they believed, and they probably still believe, that they have enough offense in that lineup, or they should have, that you can carry an offensively suspect catcher as one of your nine.
That's true.
You know, and in terms of kind of where they are, I think the fact that Marcus Semien's here on a 1 year deal tells you that, you know, it is a work in progress, right? That I think they don't think that they're the 90 plus loss team of 2 years ago. But I don't think they think they're a 90 plus win team. I think they think they're a team that if things break right or they can do some things at the deadline, they can hang in and be a contender for a playoff position. But I still, you know, we've talked about this a lot. I think next offseason is a big one for them, which is, again, why they didn't, you know, the only guy they made a huge commitment to, you know, for multiple years was Springer. They kind of kept their powder dry beyond that. And, you know, they do have to deal with extensions for guys at a certain point. We've talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they are poised to go into that market next year and probably sign a shortstop right now. There's a lot of shortstops out there. And a lot of free agent shortstops, if that, you know, and if you give, you know, you run Bo out there mostly most days this year, and then you move him over to second next year if you have to, and maybe dip into that pool and into starting pitching. You know, with the assumption, and again, I know you also have to hope that some of the guys that you're bringing along are going to settle in as regulars. You know, you believe that Nate Pearson will be at the part of the top of your rotation next year. Mm-hmm. You might believe that Alek Manoah will be in your rotation next year. You hope that the Thorntons or the Kays or some of those other guys are back into the rotation. So you're not, you know, ideally not having to build the whole thing out. But yeah, I think this is a step this season, but it's not the last step. It's not the all in. They you know, that's how they played it last year. It was not an all in off season. It was an encouraging off season, but it wasn't like and remember, they didn't trade away a single guy of value last year.
That's true. And this has to be said. We know that this organization has access to very advanced analytics, and it's entirely possible that their analytics are showing them something about Danny Jansen. I know defensive war, this doesn't, you know, very small sample size, but defensive war, he's actually in the top 10.
Yeah,
in Major League Baseball. So,
Ryu is comfortable with him.
Yeah, and Ray's comfortable with Kirk.
I think those guys are quiet behind the plate. And I like how they catch a game. I got no problem with that part of their game. I just think that's not the big question right now. It's a question, but not the biggest question.
Yeah.
And I still think Kirk is going to hit, you know, like this year even. I think once he gets, let him settle in a little, we kind of forget how little he's played at a, you know, any level above A ball. I think he is going to hit.
416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590, 590 is a text line. Dan in Georgetown wants to hear you say, get it down and get it singing.
I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't
get
do justice. Ready.
Get the foot down early. Hits coming.
See, it's like that. That's what it would sound like. I feel, I can't do
it. Can you say coinky dink? That's another one.
Coinky dink? Is that?
it's a coinky dink.
I don't know. I wish I had the whole catalog of drops here. We could just.
Buggy whips it.
Oh, buggy whips it? Worm burner? Do we have worm burner? We don't have worm burner? We don't have worm burner?
I love this virtual bark.
Do we have boning?
Of your swing, boy. It's a big word for me. And
we got to have boning, too. The boning drop is.
You know what boning means?
Yeah. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590, 590 is a text line. It is walk-off Wednesday. You don't win anything if you have the best caller, the best text of the day, but you do have my undying love and respect, which puts you in a very select company. Dave O'Brien will join us as well. He is the radio voice of the Boston Red Sox. We'll take a break, come back, and get to them their phone lines. It's Baseball Central.
Where I'm from, it is a lot hillbilly.
All right, 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Mike in Hamilton said, "Coinky dinky." He almost drove off the road laughing. It's Coinky Dinky or Coinky Dink. I can't remember. Dave O'Brien, the TV voice of the rampaging Boston Red Sox, joined us in a few minutes.
Just concede to him right now. Concede. Concede the American League East. It's over. They're unstoppable. Wait till Chris Sale comes back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Robin Porthope, you're on Baseball Central with Brunt and Blair.
Brunt and Blair, my two favorite bees on a snowy day. Porthope, looking out my window here, I can't wait for real baseball and get to go see some real baseball. But in the meantime, watching the game like you guys last night in the first dozen games or so, I agree with what you're saying, that there's a couple of gaps that need to be solved sooner than later. And catching offense is definitely one of them. But the other one is, you know, I know they want to be patient with the young guys and don't bring them up before they're ready. But I listened to you guys a couple of weeks ago. Both of you said time covering baseball, especially the Expos. Guys like Kerrigan used to say, there's only so many bullets in the gun for these pitchers, and you got to spend them wisely. Well, now they're asking pitchers to throw between 95 and 100 if they want to be a starter and have two or three pitches they throw for strikes. Well, that limits your window of opportunity. We saw that with Syndergaard, Nicolino, Sanchez, you name it. There's only so much you can get out of them. So why have they got two guys like Woods, Richardson, and definitely Manoah, who are major league ready? Like Manoah for sure. Woods, Richardson's better than three or four guys they currently have in the bullpen or in the rotation. Why don't you bring them up now and let them play? What are you waiting for?
Yeah, Rob, thanks for the call. Look, again, I think a lot of the decisions that are made, I you know, every time I say this, I almost feel like I can hear people, or I can see people rolling their eyes. But Stephen, it's true. I think there's so much data that this front office has right now that I always feel kind of, I'm always reluctant to kind of say, well, this guy should be up, because somebody, there may be a number.
Yeah.
There may be something showing them, some video evidence showing them that this guy, in fact, that his fastball isn't ready or doesn't move. I don't know. But look, I'm, the game keeps skewing younger and younger, and I'm kind of with you. I will say this, service time is not an issue for this front office.
I don't think with this particular conversation, no.
It was with Vladdy to a degree. It was with Pearson to a degree.
Yes.
Service time was an issue. But that's, I don't think that is anything to do with that. I would like to see Alek Manoah up here. I don't pretend, I didn't see in the pitch, so I don't know who's farther ahead, whether Manoah is farther ahead than Simeon Wood Richardson or...
He's a college guy, though. I think there's a reason to believe that Manoah is farther ahead.
He's a college guy. He's older.
Yeah.
You know, my thinking at this is, would I rather, even understanding there is a natural process to development and all that, would I rather have Alek Manoah go through a year in the minors after not doing anything last year effectively, or would I rather have him up here contributing?
Well, I think everybody got excited because of the spring training stuff, right?
But the other thing,
yeah,
and this also, I would ask people, in some ways I think Nate Pearson is a cautionary tale. We were all excited. Remember, we everybody told you Nate Pearson was ready for the majors. The only reason the Jays were keeping him down was because of service time. You know, if they kept him down, it was going to be a travesty, blah, blah. Well, it turns out Nate Pearson wasn't ready for the majors.
Well, I mean, then he, yeah.
And then he got hurt.
He got hurt. Like, it's hard to know, like, what would have happened if he'd been, and again, it was a 60-game season. There was nowhere else to pitch. I think you can make a case on Manoah because he's a college guy and because everybody that I've talked to in the organization about him said this is a fast-track guy, that from the moment that they drafted him, said this guy's going to move quickly. Now, you know, the highest level at which he's pitched is Vancouver. You know, and you have nowhere for him. I guess we'll see where he debuts in, 2 weeks now until the minor league season, 3 weeks. So, you know, where he lands. But, I would not be shocked if you know, to see him before the end of the summer.
Yeah, I think so.
But I kind of understand why they didn't just, I'm not sure, you know, again, if you look at what they thought the bullpen was going to look like going in, again, they've had some injuries, but where you would drop him in right now, I don't think you would drop him in and say, you're our number three starter. And as Simeon Woods Richardson is farther away.
Yeah.
Everybody I've talked to says he's a little farther away.
And I think they have to figure out what they're doing with Nate Pearson before they pivot to anything else right now. Well, you're probably going to have some sort of tandem arrangement with him. And I think that has an impact on Alek Manoah. And I've got to say this, a lot of the arguments people are making about Alek Manoah are the same arguments people were making and have been making about Alejandro Kirk. I'm just going to throw it out there. And, you know, I asked somebody in the organization the other day, does it mean anything if I look at a guy in your minor league system and I say, you know, he's better than the guy they have up in majors right now in that position? He said, no. It doesn't necessarily make any difference, because we may not think that's the case and we have more information than you. And I think that's true.
And there is, again, I know everything's topsy-turvy because no minor leagues, you know, last year, no minor leagues, or short minor leagues this year, the idea of dropping guys at every level, at least for a taste, you know, which was the kind of the operating philosophy. Well, that's kind of out the window because of what's happened with the pandemic. But we could all sit here and say, boy, why don't you know, Jordan Groshans probably just as good at third base as any of these guys. I don't think that's true.
It's right funny now. You mentioned it. Nick in Oakville, 590-590 is a text line. Would it be plausible to bring up Austin Martin or Jordan Groshans if it means to give Kevin Biggio and Bo Bichette a chance to play other positions to further help out with infield defense, or would someone from outside the organization? Well, Nick, we don't know. I don't know if Austin Martin or Jordan Groshans makes you a better defensive team.
No, I don't think anybody knows that Austin Martin's a shortstop now.
Yeah, I think Austin Martin's going to be an outfielder in this organization. Yeah. I've sort of written him off as an infielder, but outfield seems to be an area where this organization needs some help. And I can't say this enough. I don't think you move Bo Bichette in the middle of the season. I just don't. You don't go to Bo Bichette and say, we want you to move from shortstop to second base so we can give a guy who probably isn't going to be here next year, Marcus Semien, the shortstop job. Ultimately, I think Bo Bichette's a second baseman. But I leave him where he is right now. The dude's going to hit 300 or 310 for me and hit a bunch of home runs. I'm happy with that.
Well, I think, and again, I think you got to give him, like, there's the second baseman right now is on a 1-year contract.
Exactly.
There's a lot of shortstops in the free agent pool this winter. Let's see. And in terms of the third base, if you want a short-term defensive fix right now, play Santiago Espino.
Yep.
He's a really good defensive third baseman. Like, you've seen that, right? And you know, he might hit a little. But if you are really worried about that in the short term, let him play 10 games.
Jeff and Aurora. You're on Baseball Central. So, hey, I got to ask you something, Jeff. Do you think, and I'll let you get to your point, but I'm interested in your taking this. Do you think we slept on the Red Sox? We being sort of the media in general? Like, I'm not saying they're going to, you know, this is the way it's going to be. But, man, Nate Rake, they got 11 wins so far.
Yeah, I remember talks around the trades with the Royals, and there was a lot of uncertainty about the what the Red Sox were going to be and what they were going to turn out to do.
How good do you think they'd look, by the way, if they had Mookie Betts?
and Jackie Bradley.
And Jackie Bradley. Yes, exactly. Go ahead. Sorry, make your point.
No problem. Going back to the acquisitions of Springer and of Semien, especially with, as you mentioned, Semien for 1 year, do you think a lot of that, too, had to do with having veteran presence in the clubhouse for times like these?
They like him as a guy. There's no doubt about that. Everybody in baseball seems to like him as a guy. What that means, you know, we're not in the clubhouse, right? So we're probably, like, I'm always loath to kind of talk about what the presence of a guy is in the clubhouse because, honestly, I mostly have no idea. But it's something they talked about with Semien for sure.
Yeah, and I think they viewed him, and thank you very much for the call, Jeff. I think they viewed him as a guy who, if you get something out of him, something between what he was last year and the year before, and there was reason to suspect he was going to be, or expect he was going to be a bounce back candidate because he had a pretty good postseason. I just think they thought, you know, we have the money that we're not going to get the pitcher that we want to get. That's not happening.
Guys willing to shift positions.
can't be the worst thing in the world. And I also think that there was kind of a domino effect when you decide to move Vladdy to first base. You've got to have somebody at third. I think there were a whole bunch of dominoes in play here, and the organization stepped back and said, okay, once all these dominoes fall, we've got this opening. We have an opening in the infield someplace.
Yeah, and we got some guys coming.
So
we don't want to block anybody long term or limit our options. And again, looking ahead, there's a bunch of free agents coming too. So, like, whoever said there's no such thing as a bad 1 year contract was correct. There, and again, a guy who's motivated, and I know it's not about trying hard to get paid more money. They all, that's kind of goes without saying, but reasonable bounce back candidate. Worst case is going to play well defensively. We'll hit a little bit. It's got a bit of power. Guys in Oakland liked him. He was, a kind of a foundation piece for that franchise. When it was a good team, it's been a good team. Very, very little downside, lots of upside, right? Mm-hmm. Made a ton of sense.
Dave O'Brien is the Red Sox TV voice. He joins us on Baseball Central. Dave, thank you so much for doing this. I'll ask you a question I asked a caller and something I've been pondering for the last week. Like a lot of people, I think I slept on the Red Sox going into the offseason. I'm just going to ask you again, early days. This is a hell of a start, though. That team is raking. A lot of the projections said if the Red Sox hit the way they can hit, they're going to be a handful. I'll ask you, are you surprised? Maybe not where they are right now, but are you surprised as to what we've seen from them so far?
Jeff, Steve, good to be with both of you. I think all of New England is happily shocked right now because the way this club started, 0-3 against Baltimore, no offense, but it's not the same thing as playing the Blue Jays, playing Minnesota, playing Chicago, some of the other teams, Tampa Bay, that the Red Sox have played since then. But that was such a dreadful start. And juxtaposed up against last year, which was an absolute disaster, and everybody in New England was like, thank God that was only 60 games because you can't pitch worse than that. To bounce back after, since that time, they have been virtually unbeatable. And as you said, the offense has exploded. We knew this club would hit, but I think it has pitched far, far better than just about any reasonable person expected.
Is that, an impossible question, Dave, but the pitching, which would have been the big question mark for all of us going into the season. Like, right. do you believe in it at this stage? Do you see it as, is it sustainable? I know, Sale will come back at some point. But can that staff do what it's done in the last 2.5 weeks?
It's a great question. I think that just take Eduardo Rodriguez last night, and Eddie's pitched like that before, right? You guys have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
He's won 19 games. He's a number one. He's a number 1A on a World Series team, that kind of thing. Nathan Eovaldi is off to a special start. I mean, he's throwing the ball better than maybe he has since his Yankee days when he was considered a stud as a young pitcher in their rotation. After that, there are a lot of question marks. So sustainability, they're in the same boat most teams are. Most teams don't have three really reliable starters. If you do, they're talking about you playing deep into October. The Red Sox need to get Sale back in order to have that argument. But if this team does hang in, if this bullpen continues to pitch better than most people thought it would. By the way, Matt Barnes is having an incredible start to his season. No one can touch him as a closer. Well, then, yeah, I think that this is going to be one very fun summer. It's off to an incredible start. They're beating playoff teams from a year ago, and that's usually the knock around here. It's like, show me who you've beaten. Well, they're beating good teams. Blue Jays are a good club and knocked them off and took on their ace last night and beat them.
Yeah, I was going to say, I looked at, and I can't remember who tweeted out, but I looked at the pitchers that the Red Sox have beaten this year. It's basically a collection of Cy Young winners or guys who are going to finish 1, 2, 3 in the voting this year. It really is remarkable, the level of competition, the pitchers they've beaten. Yeah. Tyler Glass. I mean, yeah. it's the names you're going to hear in Cy Young voting.
Yeah, I think offensively, it's a scary lineup. I mean, when you've got Xander Bogaerts in his prime and JD Martinez with a huge bounce back year. You guys know Rafael Devers is an elite hitter. I think that outside of the American League East, it's still not known just what a beast he is. But I mean, a couple of years ago, 354 doubles, 200 hits,
yeah,
30 bombs, 100 RBIs. I mean, you just don't get – you can talk MVP with somebody when you're talking about those kind of numbers. And, you know, the guys who made a big difference are guys that Alex Cora wanted badly. He wanted Kike Hernandez. He wanted Marwin Gonzalez. And those were kind of a ripple around here. You know, most people were like, ah, okay, yawn and shrug. But they have made – because they can both play multiple positions, it gives Cora – a lot of answers during the course of a game when he can move those guys around. They've been a big hit here.
What's having Cora back? What does that mean to this team?
I don't think you can underestimate it, to be honest with you. What he did in 18, he was King Midas. I mean, everything he touched turned to gold, and that was not the case in 2019. I think he soft-shoed spring training. He didn't have the pitchers ready. He's admitted that. Thought that because it was such a talented group, they'd just go back by the time October came along and blow everybody out. Well, that was a misjudgment. He learned a lot from that. What he does more than anything, people ask this all the time, why is he so good? First of all, he's incredibly intelligent. He's maybe the smartest baseball manager, maybe this side of the Mississippi River at this point anyway. And I think that what he does is he makes contact with virtually everybody every day. And he keeps them focused. He doesn't let them wander. You know, every game, what is your responsibility today? What do you have to do to attack a Ryu or a Giolito or Barrios or Maeda? Some of these guys you mentioned that the Red Sox have already beaten. They stick with the program so well under him. And he's not a rah-rah guy. He's not a screamer. You know, he doesn't stand in the middle of the clubhouse and make demands. He's a modern-day manager. And they know, every one of those guys knows that he's got them. He's got their back.
Dave, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Dave O'Brien is the TV voice of the Boston Red Sox. And that is a fearsome lineup. I think Dave's right. I have always been shocked at how Xander Bogaerts kind of flies under the radar.
Yeah.
When you talk about really good players. And Rafael Devers is the same way. But, man, I've loved Bogaerts' game since he first came up here.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Danny on the broadcast last night talked about the fact that the entire Red Sox outfield of the present and future, so Betts, Benintendi, Jackie Bradley, all mm-hmm. of them gone.
Yeah.
Every one of those guys gone, yeah. And look at where this team is right now, right? That's astounding.
Oh, it is without question. It's just, you wonder... And you wonder what where they would have been if
they paid Mookie Betts.
If they paid Mookie Betts,
better. Better. Yeah, they're really good. I would just say they would be better.
I don't know. I still the idea that you would trade Mookie Betts, Anyhow. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590, 590 is the text line. We'll get back to your calls. We'll get back to your texts. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, so Trent Thornton will get the start tonight. No indication yet as to how long he will go or who will follow him in.
Doesn't appear to be a conventional starter situation, right? He's not stretched out enough for that, so I get it's either... We can view him as an opener, or we can view it as a piggyback. Which would you like?
I prefer piggyback.
Okay, it's a piggyback start.
I prefer piggyback.
Trent Thornton to be followed by...
Anthony K.
Tommy Malone.
Tommy Malone, who... What was the line that Buck used for Tommy Malone? Not inducing soft contact or taking hardness out of the bat or something. Basically that... If you hit Tommy Malone, you're
putting all the energy in yourself.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Eddie and Fort Erie, what's up, man?
Hey, Jeff and Steven, how you guys doing today?
Doing okay. I got to ask you, Eddie. I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Dave O'Brien, and I know you'll have an answer because you're a good baseball fan. You followed a lot. Did a lot of us sleep on the Red Sox? Do you think?
Well, as of right now, yes. Because of on the comments that Dave O'Brien said. However, I want to see how this goes throughout the year leading into the trading deadline, because it's common knowledge that they have all these contracts on the books, number one,
mm-hmm.
and they have a very, very limited farm system as well. So I'm kind of wondering where this might go going into the trade deadline, if that's, they're still in it, of course.
That's a good point, actually, Eddie, because yeah. Chaim Bloom's not there for the short term, right?
No.
He's not there to do that Red Sox thing where you blow your brains out to win it 1 year and then the Dave Dombrowski version.
Yeah. And, Eddie, I'll tell you what, it's a good point, because if you are Chaim Bloom and your team is in first place at the trade deadline, you know, the expectations are going to change around the – they've already changed around the Boston Red Sox.
In Boston? No, never.
If you're in first place at the deadline, like, let's just look ahead and say the Red Sox are in first place or close to it at the deadline and the Yankees are still scuffling. What do you think the pressure is going to be like on Chaim Bloom to see this thing through?
Whew. That is the most intriguing thing about all of this, because we don't know where they're going to go. And what if some of the guys, like, let's say JD Martinez, who's really, you know, playing well so far, rebuild his value up again and they trade him in the off season. Yeah. The same thing with maybe Nathan Eovaldi, who's got a big contract, you know, they could do that too. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about that you mentioned, Jeff, in your questions was the, how much of a big help would it be if Springer and Hernandez come back? The one thing I will say is this: if the Blue Jays don't finish strongly this month,
mm-hmm.
this could go off the rails pretty quickly. Because yes, they will have a big presence, but like Steven said, we don't know about Hernandez. He hasn't played much. He's been swinging, you know, on a team quarantine. We don't know. And look at who they're gonna have playing against in the next month. You got Oakland, and they haven't, you know, that's a hit and miss team. You got Houston, who they have trouble with since the Astros came into the American League 8 years ago. And you have the Braves, and they have the Red Sox and the Rays again. You know, they have to finish strong, because if they don't finish strong, this could go off the rails pretty quickly, even if Springer and Hernandez come back.
No, that Eddie, thanks for the call. It's a great point. And I think several people have pointed out that one of the things the main thing, I think, if you're the Blue Jays right now, Eddie, you don't have Pearson, you don't have Springer, you don't have Hernandez, you don't want to get buried.
Yeah.
That's to me that right now you're in, and I think Shai wrote this as well, you're missing about 12.4 WAR out of your lineup. You're in kind of survival mode right
now. Yeah. And you can, look, you can dig a hole in April and May and get out of it to a point.
To a point.
Depends how deep the hole is.
Well, and it depends whether or not there's anybody shoveling dirt on top of you.
Yeah, that's exactly, somebody running away. That's exactly right. Now,
schedule is a bear. Eddie's right. Houston, Oakland. Yeah.
Now, at some point, they will, you know, they missed the early season glories of the Orioles. So they'll get the Orioles when they have fallen back to earth. It's, you know, they got a bunch of games with them. These things do. Last year, of course, we had the very limited schedule, right? The very limited number of teams they played. This year, it's going to feel a little bit different. I think we kind of get used to it again. But the next stretch is going to be really challenging. There's a lot of good teams. I think you just, as you said, Jeff, it's about kind of keeping your head above water until you see what you have. And they may not, like, if you're betting on them being 100% entirely healthy,
mm-hmm.
Well, number one, nobody in baseball right now seems to be 100% entirely healthy. That seems to be going around, but, I think we're looking for a representative sample of this team, and I'm not sure that we've seen that yet.
Yeah, I think you need to see how the lineup looks with Springer and Teoscar in it, and what that does to guys who are scuffling right now. Does it buy them, maybe give them a little bit of a comfort zone? The defense concerns me, because I don't know if there's a fix. Of all the things that, quote-unquote, bother me about the Jays right now, I don't know if your defense gets better as the season goes on. I do take solace from the fact that the bullpen has already basically imploded because of injuries, and they're still making it work.
Yeah.
And I do take solace from the fact that Steven Matz and Robbie Ray are doing things that are... They're unexpected if you look at where they were last year, but not unexpected if you look at the body of work.
I heard you say that on the show this morning when you were on on Good Show, and I think that's exactly correct, is that it's not the, boy, how long is this going to last, because they've never done this before. In fact, those guys, and again, I obviously with some big bumps in their career, but there's enough of a pedigree there where you can go, you know, yeah, they're probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if anytime you get a guy who, you know, is a lifetime AAA pitcher who has a great start, you know, in the major leagues for three or four starts, you go, well, this ain't going to happen. Right. Like, you know, that he will turn into a pumpkin eventually. These guys will have their ups and downs, I think, but I say the three-fifths of the rotation to me looks pretty good right now. Not sure about the other, about four and five.
Yeah. But again, that's kind of what I,
but that's as
that, that's my best, I, for me, that's my best case scenario. That's what I thought 100%. Going into the year.
That's correct.
That's my best case scenario because I took grief for it, but I just kind of, I'll take what Nate Pearson gives me. I wasn't counting on Nate Pearson, but I'm okay with where the rotation is right now. And frankly, it's better than where I thought it would be when Nate Pearson went down. So,
well, as Dave O'Brien said, that's, you know, if you've got three starters in baseball now,
yeah,
you're a contender, right?
Absolutely. Kenzie and Claremont.
Hey, how's it going, boys?
Going well, Kenzie. What's up, man?
I just feel that, you know, with the bullpen playing so well, when we get Springer back, I have a good feeling he's going to bring up the pedigree of hitting and just the culture around there. You know, that's why we brought him in. So I think maybe guys like Cavan and I think Grichuk's going to, I hope he stays in the lineup. They find a spot for him because
yeah,
I think
question.
He's going to continue to bat great. What do you think about that with just his presence, just to bring up the competitive level of the team?
Well, I think, and thanks for the call, Kenzie. I mean, one thing I think we said about having Springer in the lineup is that it restores some order, to the order. Bad pun, but I really think it does. When George Springer signed, I don't think any of us necessarily thought that the lineup would be Semien, Bichette, Guerrero. I thought Semien might hit second.
Yeah.
Behind Springer. That still may be the case. But I would certainly have no problem if they want to go Springer, Bichette,
Vladdy. I kind of think that's where it's going. And I think Semien, you drop Semien down to seven or something like that.
Well, and the other thing, you know, I think all of these right-handed hitters, generally they can handle left-handed pitching okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get carried away with platoon advantage. And I think platoon advantage is important, but it's not necessarily important. Like, nobody worries about platoon advantage with Mike Trout. Nobody's going to worry about platoon advantage with Vladimir Guerrero.
Well, right-handed hitters see more right-handed pitching than anything else, right?
Yeah.
Like that's where you grow up against right-handed pitching. So, I think when you bring Springer in, again, I think people are going to have to be patient with Teoscar just because of the circumstances. Obviously, if he gets hot in the middle of that lineup, then that's a whole other thing. But I think it restores some balance to the lineup, as you said, and it gives it some length. It just, you know, and again, I'm not sure we would have identified where the dead spots in this lineup were starting the season. It didn't, you know, it still looked like a good offensive lineup with the possible exception of Jansen, who has struggled at the major league level. But it just gives you a little bit of insurance and a little bit of insulation when guys go cold. Cause somebody's always going to be cold. Somebody's always going to be struggling. And if they, you know, if they all get hot, it's a potentially still a very, very good offensive lineup.
Yeah. I should mention, by the way, that, because I haven't mentioned it, tonight's game will be at 7:10 on Sportsnet 590, the Fan on Sportsnet. I have not checked the weather. I know that they slapped the tarp down on the field last night right away, but that's something that it's almost outdoor stadium. It's almost par for the course. I have not checked the weather. I do know that the Phillies in San Francisco had a little bit of a blip, a little bit of a rain there. But I don't know. It might be cold, but I don't know if Boston is.
I'll tell you in one second.
No, Brunt's got his weather app out.
Gale warning.
There you go.
That's not.
Is that Rich Gale? Rich Gale warning.
Let's see here. It doesn't actually look that. Yeah.
Gale warning.
Yeah. It looks. It's going to blow. Well, no.
What are you looking at? The Maritime. Look at the Maritime app.
Look there. See the red, all that red.
All right.
So it's kind of calmed down a little this evening. So I'm guessing they're going to play. That's what I think the gales are about to are going to happen any moment now.
I'm sorry.
So as long as Fenway doesn't blow away in the meantime, my guess is they will play. There's my meteorological prediction.
Okay. All right. It just kind of got my attention right away.
Me too.
Gale warning. So 7:10 first pitch. As we mentioned, the Red Sox and the Jays, Trent Thornton will start for the Jays, and no indication yet as to how many innings he'll go or who will come in after him. But I think Shai has pointed out that that Anthony Kay would certainly be a candidate, for that, and play the little righty lefty game, I guess, with the Boston Red Sox.
But I tell you, I'm looking ahead already to, they've got always got another off day tomorrow, but right. The weekend in Tampa, I'm looking forward to seeing George Springer game in a Blue Jays uniform.
I'm willing to bet, and I don't know. I would not be surprised if we should see George Springer play this weekend.
Yeah, no, I think that's the plan. Yeah, I think, and,
I think a lot of people thought when Charlie saying, well, he may rejoin us again when we get back to Dunedin. Well, they are going to be back.
That's right. They're going to be sleeping in their own beds, yes.
Effectively.
I think you're going to see him. I think you're going to see Jordan Romano. A fair bit of encouraging news. Now, I was on with Tim and friends after the show last night.
Oh, you're a friend.
With Ross. Okay. Ross Atkins, who said, Julian Merriweather's not doing anything for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like nothing. So if you start backdating that, so if you do nothing for 2 weeks, then the buildup from there, we all know the long tossing on the field, the, et cetera, et cetera. That's got to be a month, doesn't it?
Well, I still, the injury was a hip injury.
It is how did Ross describe it? It is an, what do we call those injuries now? But he said it was in a bad place because of the way Julian Merriweather's motion is, the way he pitches. It was in a particularly tricky place. So
I think Julian Merriweather, we may just when he's ready to pitch, I'll be ready for him. But yeah. I have not penciled or inked him in.
No, I think it's. Anytime soon. It didn't sound like it was imminent. Let's put it that way. Ross was pretty optimistic about a lot of other hurt guys, but he didn't.
Well, the Romano thing seemed to be. Well, luckily, based on what nothing. Pete Walker said, it seemed to be. It seems to be something that they aren't worried about.
Yes.
And
same with Tom Hatch. And that looked horrible in the moment, but they seem to be okay with him. So
I still think.
That's a bunch of arms we're talking about.
And I made this point. I still think teams are really erring on the side of caution here when it comes to injuries this year.
Ross said that as well. Yeah. He said that this team, that a lot of teams are, because of last year, what didn't happen last year, they're just throwing guys on that 10-day who otherwise would have continued to play.
You know what? You might as well, because your minor league pitchers aren't doing squat for another 2 weeks.
That is correct.
You might as well use them. Eddie in Fort Erie, you walked us off today. Right, Eddie in Fort Erie. What's up, man?
But like Steven said, we don't know about Hernandez. He hasn't played much. He's been swinging, on a team quarantine. We don't know. And look at who they're going to have playing against in the next month. You got Oakland, and they haven't... Yep. That's a hidden miss team. You got Houston, who they have trouble with since the Astros came into the American League 8 years ago. And you have the Braves, and they have the Red Sox and the Rays again. They have to finish strong, because if they don't finish strong, this could go off the rails pretty quickly, even if Springer and Hernandez come back.